Is it backup?
Look, we don't need any backup, even if he has great hair and famous relatives.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
That's the thing about tasing. Don't think it's going to happen, then there it is.
Russ Dellinger.
Cal wins. They should rename the stadium Woke Campbell.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Panhandle man's life sucks more.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod and cold open there. Quinn Ewers in the new Dr. Pepper commercial. Shout out to Quinn Ewers for taking the backup quarterback bit straight on. Who needs a backup? Quinn had a heck of a day yesterday. 14 of 16, 185, two touchdowns and an interception. Takes a seat in the blowout victory for the Longhorns. In comes Arch. Play the commercial and 9 of 12, 223 yards, four touchdowns passing, 3 of 53, one touchdown running. Cooper speed. Did we know Mannings could run?
Yeah. Look, hey, Archie he could always run. Archie could run, and Cooper. Cooper was a wide receiver. Yeah.
Archie could run. Yeah.
Just because Peyton Manning was a statue and Eli was pretty much a statue doesn't mean the whole family's a statue.
He said it was a quote after the game. He said he got his speed from his mom. Well, I'm sure Cooper is thrilled about that.
Well, tough break. Yeah. She's a hell of an athlete, at Mrs. Manning. She's a hell of an athlete. I can tell you that because I haven't seen that. I guess Archie could run. That. On point, Dr. Pepper. You know, we have this we'll criticize them when they're off, but they were on that one. Getting Quinn Ewers to talk about that. And good for Quinn Ewers to have the confidence to take that on because you never know how it's going to go. It's going well for the Texas Longhorns. Could be number one. We're going to get to Georgia's little incident. But here's a question for you. Pat, let's play a game. Whose life sucks more? It's always a good one for us. A nice Sunday discussion.
Oh, yeah.
Seminole fan, and not just the one that they're still trying to hunt down to eat the cup of dog excrement. Or Gator fan.
Yeah.
Florida State loses 20-10 to Memphis. I actually watched a bunch of that game. Shout out to Memphis. They played a really good football game, and I don't want that to be overshadowed. That's a nice team, and they played really well. But FSU is 0-3. And then Florida plays Wake. I mean, they play A&M and lose 33-20. Some of the side notes here, we still don't know about the guy who dared to eat the cup. During the Gator game, they showed a male fan in the Gator student section wearing blue and orange overalls with a pack of women, no less than analyst Jesse Palmer, who brings his expertise as also the host of The Bachelor. Declares, I'm going to make a bold prediction. I'm going to say he's in the friend zone. Ouch. He played at Florida. Like, it hurts when the commentators are now just bagging on your dudes in silly outfits. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, perhaps. Jokingly said he may convene a special session of Congress. We're down to the grandstanding politicians with gallows humor. And nobody being like, but that's a bipartisan misery. Whose life sucks more, Pat? Whose life sucks more?
Yeah, in the subdivisions of the Florida man hierarchy, you know, of dysfunction and weirdness, you have Panhandle Man and you have Central Florida Man. And right now, I will say Panhandle Man's life sucks more. It's close. They both suck. There's without a doubt, they both suck. But think of it this way, if you are Panhandle Man. You haven't won, nothing has gone right since Selection Sunday 2023. Not a single thing. Unless you count suing the ACC and getting the entire country mad at you as a good thing. I do not. So far, the lawsuits haven't generated anything. They're 0-4. Each loss has gotten progressively worse. You were blown out in the bowl game. Yeah, blown out in the bowl game. But you only had a half a team. Whatever, you can blow that off. You can slide that aside. Then you start this season in Ireland, and you are upset in a conference game by Georgia Tech. Then you come home and you get pounded by Boston College. And then you lose to a non-power conference Memphis team. And in 120 minutes played in Doak Campbell Stadium this year, Florida State has led for zero of them. They have been behind all game, every game, to both BC and Memphis. Not to Clemson and, you know, some other power team, but to BC and to Memphis. So I would say that, combined with the fact that, like, the building alarm went off in the middle of Mike Norvell's press conference.
I forgot that one.
Yeah.
Brutal. Like, things are going worse there. Because the other thing is, like, and I don't think you should get rid of Mike Norvell by any stretch, but you're definitely not getting rid of Mike Norvell. Whereas Central Florida Man is going to be getting rid of their coach almost assuredly sometime in the relatively near future. So everybody feels a little better when you're about to get a new coach, but that ain't happening at Florida State.
Well, at least the Panhandle Man has recent success to lean on. Unfortunately, the Central Florida Man does not as much. I was looking this up as Pat was talking, so I could take the Central Florida angle. The last time that Florida won a conference championship was, anybody want to take a guess?
Last time Florida Urban. Won a conference championship?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Urban, 2008.
Yeah. Yeah, 2008. And then the last time they won at least 12 games, which Panhandle Man experienced just last year, 2009. So it's been a while. And I'm definitely going to go with Central Florida Man, who's just been down longer and doesn't have that recent success. But I do understand Pat's point, especially with regards to the fact that, you know, you could relieve some of this anger and frustration on firing your coach, which doesn't appear to be something happening in the next day or days. But we all know probably something that will be happening in the coming weeks.
All right, I'm going to rule on FS Seminole Man as having it worse. And here's why. Gators are... they're confronting rock bottom, right? Napier is not going to last. They said, what do you think of the booing fans? I probably would have done that also. So basically, that's like, hand me the, that's SEC code, Jimmy Sexton ease of can't send me the pen to sign my buyout. When you start complimenting the fans for booing you, I've seen this act.
Yes, I would do that too. I suck. Yeah. Yeah.
You tell your wife we're going to be able to have the family over for Thanksgiving because I ain't going to be working.
That's right.
Let's enjoy
you
a
will
Thanksgiving.
Be paid, but we honey will still be paid, oh, honey.
Get the ham, get the turkey, get the turducken, get it all. Yeah. The Napier family is going to eat. We're going to have the whole weekend off. It's going to be great.
$26 million, buy a small island.
Yes, all set. They've confronted it. Perhaps their new guy can keep DJ Lagway, although he didn't play very well yesterday, but still. And they're still in the SEC. Seminoles are sitting there going, we're trying to sue our way out. We're plaintiff number one. We've lost every court battle so far and every game. Mike Norvell's not a bad coach. Like we're 0-3 and our coach is actually good. This is the same guy that got us to 12-0. So it's more like, is there something systemically problematic here? Is this just our existence? I think it is. I think this is the existence of the future of college football. Maybe this is the extreme measure. 12-0, 0-3. I think they're the first team to ever do that. But just it's hard to be the first in any. I mean, this sport has been around. It's got some history to it. And, you know, I get you back in the day, you got to schedule like Tallahassee YMCA or something. But the you're like, what is going on? We actually have a good coach and we're like firing Mike Norvell would be stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not happening.
But here we are. The team is dreadful. I'll tell you what, I'm guessing, boy, I mean, I feel the excitement for next week's Florida at Mississippi State game. Boy, ooh. That's SEC.
That is the fellowship of the miserable right there.
Yeah, that's a rough one, man. How about Florida State? They host 3-0 Cal to open the ACC slate.
Somebody had tweeted they're already 0-2 in the ACC. Oh, no, they're true. Last
what
place.
Am I thinking? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
But
yeah.
Cal is favored. Cal's yeah. favored in Tallahassee.
Yeah. Somebody made the joke to me, or I saw it on Twitter that, you know, because Cal obviously beat Auburn already, you know, won at Auburn. And there was a lot of political jokes made. And then Cal's coming back over and to a similar region of the country. And somebody mentioned if Cal wins, they should rename the stadium Woke Campbell.
That's pretty good.
Election year, Dan.
Oh, my God.
Election humor.
That is funny.
Great game last Saturday night. It was Pac-12 after dark, except it was a former Pac-12 team, Cal, playing a future Pac-12 team, San Diego State. The sport's in a weird place. It's in a weird, weird yeah. place.
Yeah.
Speaking of your alma mater, Ross, Mississippi State absolutely trucked lock of the year. Yeah. I had lock of the Not week great. On this one. Because yeah. I was going to pick UNLV as my lock of the week because I think they're juicy. I'd keep picking them. I may pick them every time I can. But Toledo plus 11.5 at Mississippi State was the most confounding. Like, I got nervous because it was so obvious to me.
Yeah.
That I was like, am I missing? Like, did the entire offensive line get sick? Like, what does Vegas know? 41-17, they destroyed Mississippi State. This is a bad SEC team.
Yeah,
bad. But this is a great Toledo team. Yeah. And Memphis beats Florida State 20-10. UNLV beats Kansas 23-20. Washington State beats Washington. Epic goal line stand.
Yeah.
Georgia
My
State.
My lock of the week. The Cougs.
Your lock of the week. Georgia State beats Vanderbilt 36-32. We just talked about Northern Illinois beat a Notre Dame team. That looks like the Four Horsemen when they go play Purdue.
Yeah.
They look like they had Bob Roarman Honda out there trying to tackle him. We were told the Group of Five would never win another football game again.
Yeah.
The misery. We have nobody. No, it's not fair, but this is like a great week 10 years ago, right? Like, has anything really changed? How is the Group of Five doing this, Pat? They look great.
They look outstanding. I mean, kudos to all those schools that you mentioned, especially, I mean, like Washington State, what a week for Washington State. Holy moly. You get yourself a presumably viable conference lined up, and then you go into Seattle and you beat those no good blankety blanks who helped ruin the old Pac-12, and you're 3-0 and you have smoked Texas Tech. And you've beaten Washington. I mean, rank the Cougars. And this is after you lose your all-everything quarterback, Cam Ward. The next guy's pretty darn good, too. John Mateer is playing very well. Good dual-threat quarterback there. And that's the thing. So whether it's coaching, player development, what have you, there is life after having somebody transfer out of your program. Look at Toledo. At quarterback there. You lose Daquan Finn. He goes into the portal and goes to Baylor. And things are going pretty well for him there. But doesn't mean Toledo's dead by any stretch because they've got his 3-year backup, Tucker Gleason, slot him in. He's playing great. Nine touchdowns, zero interceptions so far at quarterback for the Rockets. Jason Candle, great coach. He's stayed at Toledo, and he's built something really solid. I mean, I love seeing it. I obviously feel some predisposition to the non-Power 5 schools that don't have the advantages the other ones do and can still beat them. And so I've greatly enjoyed some of the developments so far the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I was most impressed, I think, by UNLV. I think they probably beat the best, you know, of all the Power Conference teams. I think they probably beat the best one. Well, I mean, Notre Dame might be the best one. But of this week, this past week, I think Kansas was probably the best team that G5 took down. And yeah, Barry Odom got it rolling. To Pat's point about Jason Candle at Toledo, you know, I don't know that there's been a coach out there on the G5 level who's deserved more of a promotion, you know, who's earned more of a promotion up to another job than Jason Candle. It's incredible what he's done in Toledo. And I think there are probably a few schools, maybe even the one he played against Saturday, who are kicking themselves for not hiring him over the last few years. He's been in the mix for quite a few jobs. So maybe this, you know, they don't play SEC teams a lot, and winning like that the way he did at an SEC team, you know, I'm sure that'll get some attention for him and his future.
He's never had he had a 1-11 win season in 17. I'm just looking at this. He had 11 last year. The MAC is so hard to put up those like eye popping numbers, but this guy's a great football coach. Remember there was rumors last year he was going to leave Toledo to become the coordinator at Ohio State. And there was this belief that the way to get a Power 5 job was either traditionally you got to the MAC, you start winning. I mean, he's 44 years old and he's an excellent. He's had 2-11 win seasons, like all the experience. This is completely anecdotal, but I know a lot of high school football coaches in the state of Michigan. Toledo's right on the edge of it. They all say that they don't. I've asked them, like, what program does the best at trying to unearth some guys? Like, I sometimes just ask different questions. Who's a really good recruiter in your, you know, that comes into your program? And Candle gets brought up all the time. Like, they find these guys. And then 3 years later, there they are. He's ready. Yeah, we'll just go into the SEC and win. And it's like the hiring lately has either been coordinators or these FCS, like crazy, like, oh, I'm 44-2 or something like that. And not that MAC level, Sun Belt level guy getting just that move up, right? That would sort of just be that progression. Now, eventually it's going to happen, but man, great win for Toledo. October 19th, Toledo at Northern Illinois.
I'm telling you, which is the big, I put the poll question on Twitter, which is the bigger game October 19th? Texas, Georgia, or Northern Illinois? Toledo, baby. Come on. Maction.
Hey, there's Maction. A CFP playoff spot potentially on the line now in those type of games. So.
That's right.
I think the issue, I've said this a number of times, I'm not quite there on the whole formation of it, but there's too many good players. There's too many good football players in this country. And we're used to the concept of like you're either in or you're out because the NFL can define you whether you're an NFL player or not an NFL player. But what we know from the NFL is they are always picking up some guy off the street at the end and he makes some big play in the playoffs or something. Like the mash after you get over those top guys, like, no, there's no Quinn Ewers backed up by Arch Manning in the Sun Belt to the MAC, but there's a bunch of good guys. And you can't just sit there and say you're not good because we have a transfer portal. And if you watch Toledo yesterday, I mean, they manhandled. And I know it's a bad team, but this is supposed to be, well, I got all this money. I got all the SEC. Not one kid at Toledo would have chosen to go to Toledo over Mississippi State. And not one time would Mississippi State have chosen any of the Toledo guys over their guys. And yet it wasn't even close. Memphis stood straight up with FSU. Like that was not some fluky deal. UNLV is playing really well. It's just a lot of good teams. So I just think the group of five death has been greatly exaggerated. like every other doomsday, the world is ending bit in college athletics history.
Well, the thing is, some of it is coming from the Group of Five.
It always comes from those people.
Yeah, I mean, they're the one, you know, there's...
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
shoot, right. I wrote about it last week.
Absolutely.
Sean Fraser, the Northern Illinois athletic director, I mean, he's been one of the most vocal proponents, you know, for a more of a divide in the G5 doing their own thing. Because, you know, and, you know, look, this has been a good week and a good couple weeks for the G5, but in the long term, long run, he'll say... We need to do our own thing, you know, and there's a lot of them that feel that way. And the shoot, you know, I think I quoted in the spring, Jamie Chadwell, Liberty coach, saying the same thing, basically. I think he said, and we could actually see this happening. He said, Ross, if we get in the playoff as the 12 seed and have to go to Athens, Georgia and play Georgia as the 5 seed, what are we doing? Like, is that, that's what we're working for? And that's what they, you know, that's what they say. But I'm glad we're having these wins. And you wonder, Dan, the next stage of this, if the settlement does go through, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later in the week. But, you know, a lot of these G5 programs aren't going to be offering little to no rev share. And all these programs that these G5 schools beat this week are going to offer the rev share, right? And some of them are the max. So that could be more, you know, more of a separation. I guess is what they might tell you.
Georgia, number one team in the country, goes to Kentucky, ekes out a victory. Don't punt the ball, Coach Stoops. So depressing.
He leaned on his defense. It's what kept them in the game.
Yeah, it wasn't the worst strategy. I'm not going to overhype it because they probably weren't going to win the game anyway. It's 4th and 6, but it's like. I mean, you're 1-1. You're Kentucky. Yeah. You got Georgia at home. The aggression to me is make the play, and then you lean on your defense.
Right. That's the thing. I mean, it's not like the game is not over if you don't convert the fourth down, but the game, you may win the game if you convert the fourth down, as opposed to we're going to punt it to Carson Beck, who's, you know, maybe the best quarterback in the country, certainly in the top 2 or 3, and say, yeah, we're going to stop it. I know they've stopped him most of the game, but game on the line, I will say Mike Bobo finally called some aggressive plays in that last drive after, I thought, coddling Carson Beck for much of the game. But take your chances, man. Take your Kentucky, as you said, you're coming off a 25-point home loss to South Carolina, and you've got the number one team in the country on the ropes. I think you got to go for it.
So what do you make of these results? Like, do you panic about Georgia? Kentucky may have had the worst performance outside of Notre Dame last week. Then against South Carolina, they come back and play really good football game and almost beat Kentucky. South Carolina played well yesterday. They just gave up a huge lead to LSU, but LSU comes in. Like, there's this mix. Notre Dame could not have played worse against Northern Illinois, could not have played better against Purdue. You can say whatever you want. 66-7, 362-38 on the ground. They only allowed 1 of 12 third down conversions, most points since 65. Like, we're gonna have clunkers? Is there just too much? Is this a little bit more, is there too much parity? Like, what do you make of this stuff where one week in, week out, heretofore, Georgia looked as good as you could possibly look. Now then they don't. I don't know what quite to make of all of this. What do you think, Pat?
Yeah, I mean, it's college football where there's going to be these vagaries to a degree. But with Georgia, the two things that somewhat maybe explain this. One, every time they go to Lexington, this is kind of how the game goes. And they've scored, I think it's 14, 16, and 13 in their last three games there. They've won them all, but they are all just like wisdom tooth extractions. They're painful, slogging defense. But the other thing is, I've said this since 2017, Kirby Smart's teams always find one game where they just suck. I mean, maybe this is it. And I didn't think they completely sucked, but they really didn't play like Georgia plays. They did not tackle worth a darn, and that rarely happens with Georgia. I mean, Kentucky guys just running through them. So there's one game a year when they do not show up and perform like Georgia does the other 12, 13, 14, and maybe that was it for them. As for the other ones, if I'm a Notre Dame fan, I'm madder today maybe than I was last Sunday, because that's how dominant the team can be. And the variance in performance from game one, hard-fought, tough win in College Station, to the disaster at home, to this absolute mauling of Purdue, that's too big a variance. That tells me you're not focused, you're not prepared, you're not giving maximum effort, you're not executing. So that would really tick me off, because that is such an underperformance there. But I think we're gonna see some of these things, you know, throughout the season, as we do most seasons, but it might just be a little bit more glaring maybe now, as teams, especially early in the year, people are still putting together rosters and figuring out what they're good at.
Yeah, that's all I was gonna say is I mean, we always see this because they're 18, 19, and 20-year-old college students, which is why I think, you know, the big difference between NFL and college, that we do have that. We do have these crazy games and performances because they are young people out there. But the other reason is that you look at the transfer portal and all these teams that are just brand new, and 40, 50 new players. And early in the year, everybody, I think, is trying to feel out their own team a little bit. And I would assume that's maybe part of this. Georgia obviously is not in that group, right? They don't have like a ton of transfers. And that was a bizarre, that was a weird one. And I didn't get, it was going on right as my game was going on that I was at, and didn't get to watch a ton of it. But what happened? Georgia couldn't move the football, it looked like, huh?
Yeah. Georgia got whipped up front, really both sides, but especially their offensive line got whipped. Tate Ratledge got hurt, which certainly doesn't help, but they got no push. You know, just didn't break plays. They had no splash plays, really.
There's like no chunk play until the end there.
Yeah.
Kind of got ETN going a little in the end. Like all of a sudden there's an 8-yard run, 9-yard, but it just wasn't there. These are some schizophrenic teams. They're just all over the place. South Carolina's kicking themselves. 17-point lead they blew to LSU. 13 penalties, 123 yards. I thought that was the game. And they would have been really in a special, special place right now with that victory. But a quality respect to the Tigers. Brian Kelly's pounding the table in Vegas saying we can't finish games. Obviously, this wasn't finishing with the lead, but they finished this one, in a really hyped environment and on the road against what I think is a very good SEC team. So that's some growth from week one to week three for LSU. And again, I just never thought that loss to USC was that bad. All right, we'll be back after this with more overreactions. All right, clean up one thing about the Purdue game. Bad day at Purdue, but our guy Zach Spangler did get his big golf check. Yes. Warman Honda did the right thing. So Zach Spangler got his 5K, and the student section got 5K, like the group. I don't know what that, they buy t-shirts or whatever they do. Maybe they go drinking. I don't know. And who knows if he took Maddie to the free burgers at AJ's. Anything could be possible, but we're going to stay out of the Spangler life for, like, you know, let him live his life.
Friend of the pod. Absolutely. Glad we could be of service to him.
All right. I want to bring this up. I looked last week. There was a headline that Travis Hunter's Heisman, the dual threat star at Colorado, his Heisman odds had dropped to 5,000 to 1. I don't advise gambling, but boy, I'd take a really look at that. Today it's 3,500 this morning. To win the Heisman Trophy, he is ranked 13th. He's behind a slew of quarterbacks, including like Nussmeier, and I mean, like, just guys.
Yeah, come on.
Travis Hunter yesterday, 13 receptions, 100 yards, 2 touchdowns against Colorado State, an interception, 1 pass breakup. I don't know. He played 129 plays against North Dakota State, 126 against Nebraska. Expected, I think we wait for Pro Football Folk. I don't know why we don't have. This is how incredible Travis Hunter is. The actual official box score that comes out does not include total plays of an individual. It's like the sport doesn't even consider a stat that is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So I scan this, I'm like, so we got to wait for Pro Football Focus to tell us.
Yeah. To count snaps for people.
But expected 120. So listen, if this guy stays, I don't even like bringing it up. Let's say he just plays all the games, right? I don't even want to put it out there in the atmosphere, but that's a lot of plays. And plays like this, and this isn't the most outstanding, and someone sits down and fills out a ballot and says, who's the most outstanding player in college football, and does not choose Travis Hunter. They need their head examined. So is this odds? Is this Vegas saying he's not going to make it through the whole season? Is this saying Heisman voters are idiots and they're just going to go with whatever QBs rank number one with four, like this many yards when they're all interchangeable, as we've literally seeing? I'm nothing against Cam Ward or Carson Beck or Will Howard or you guys are great, or Quinn Ewers, but we have one of you we have four of you every year. This guy is doing something we've never seen. This is Shohei Ohtani. Right? He's playing full time both positions at a first round NFL level. I don't care if you don't like Coach Prime. I don't care if you don't like Shador. I don't care if they only win four or five games. He's doing this against, if somebody plays full time both ways and puts up these kind of stats against power four competition, how in the hell is he not win the Heisman Trophy, Ross?
The Heisman has evolved into the best player on the best team or one of the best teams. And I think the odds are the way they are because the projections are that Colorado will not be one of the best teams at the end of the year. Even if he is the best player in football, the way we've seen the Heisman go is to a team that is good and at the end of the year is one of the best ones. And I just think that's probably why we're seeing that the way it is. But you're right. I mean, he's probably far and away the most impressive player in college football this year.
He is without peer right now. And if you want to give a Heisman to somebody who's without peer, this would seem like the time to do it and the person to do it to. Colorado put out something they said. They said 123 snaps for him. And they also, they said it's believed to be the first time in the modern era of college football history a stat line like that has happened. They don't quantify like that, but I am guessing 100 receiving yards and an interception. Throw in two touchdowns, five tackles, a pass breakup. I mean, nobody is doing this, and nobody has done it for who knows how long. You can go back and talk Gordy Lockbaum. We did on the podcast last year. You know, from the 1980s at Holy Cross playing 1AA ball then. Before that, you got to go back to like Paul Hornung in the 1950s at Notre Dame.
That's what I was thinking, the Hornung.
I mean, that's how incredible this is. He is second in the nation right now in receptions per game at 10 per game. And he's, I think, let me see, where is it?
They don't even throw it to him.
No, he's ninth in receiving yards. And he's probably a better defensive back than he is a receiver. That's what's just incredible about this. I mean, and I really hope, I don't want to get carried away talking about the NFL because people spend too much time doing that, but I hope he gets a chance to play both in the NFL. But first, I hope he gets the recognition and consideration for the Heisman now for what he's doing. Paul Hornung won the Heisman on a 2-8 team. Now, that 2-8 team was Notre Dame, but this guy should be, if he keeps playing like this, he should absolutely be in the mix all year.
Gordy Lockbaum finished third or something.
Yeah, he got a lot of votes. Hell, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yeah. I was watching some of the game last night. His second touchdown, he ran this little delay slant route. I mean, the guy is incredible. Yeah. Again, you can sit there and be like, Coach Prime this, Coach, don't forget it. This guy. And he doesn't just play defense. Like, he's about the business. He will hit you.
He will hit you.
He is not
and he will hit.
He is running up and lowering a shoulder. Like, I'm like, oh my God, Travis. Because this was the game he got hurt last year, that Colorado State. Play both ways in the NFL. You got to pay me both ways. I mean, they'll be like, Champ Bailey did a lot. Yes, Champ Bailey. Incredible. Charles Woodson. I mean, we're talking Charles Woodson and Champ Bailey, two of the greatest players. Cam Newton is probably the greatest college football player I ever saw. Like, just dominant. Took an Auburn team. He's playing quarterback, all of that. But this is easily one of the best football players I've ever seen play football. And he is 13th behind the LSU. What are we doing? If you don't vote for this guy, if he plays 10 of these games and you do not vote for this guy, you should have your just what is even the point of being a voter in this? This isn't even close.
No. And I look, first of all, I hate all these odds that come out, you know, where they're just throwing shit at a wall.
I like it at 3,500-1 right now. plus 3,500. And that's not 3,500-1. It's plus 3,500. I'm sorry.
There, you know, that's Vegas trying to reduce it all to not quite an algorithm, but nearly. But that's almost what the voting has become is almost
an algorithm.
But it's
voter
algorithm.
Stupidity. I think they're factoring in voter stupidity.
Yeah.
So I am starting the education campaign.
Okay. You don't
have
a voter.
I know that. Ross, do you vote? Yeah. I don't vote.
I do. Yeah.
You vote. There you go. We got two for Travis. I'm canvassing.
Right now? Absolutely.
You guys don't live in swing states. People knock on your door and stuff like that. I'm canvassing. Can I count on your vote? Can I count
on
your
vote? State, Dan.
This is an apolitical podcast.
You don't even count Ross's vote.
No, we don't even count.
I don't vote for Heisman. I'm not allowed to handle something that serious.
Yeah.
Great moments in our new Twitter tradition of over-rambunctious fans promising to do horrible things if their team loses. I'm really in on this thread. We know that the guy who said he'd eat the red Solo cup worth of dog excrement if BC beat Florida State has gone into hiding. Although they're still trying to hunt him down. Something at Dutchmeyer 1873. If UCF beats TCU, I will tase my.
No.
The part of your body that you would least, male, that you would least want to be tased.
Your nose? Is it your nose?
Yeah. No, not your nose. Not your nose.
Okay.
Just a couple footballs out there.
Yeah.
Okay. If UFC. Guess what happened?
Yeah.
The Gus bus right to the. I don't know what happened to Dutchmeyer 18. Are we going to film this? I hope not.
No,
but
we're not.
What is possessing these people? Who has that much faith in the Horned Frogs? My God. You couldn't have gotten Sonny Dykes to be like, we're definitely winning. Why would you do this?
Well, he was feeling pretty good down to his plums when they were up by three touchdowns late in the game, and then they blew it and lost 35-34.
That's the thing about tasing. You don't think it's going to happen? Then there it is.
There it is.
I've seen those ones on the internet. Yeah. I'm going to shoot it at you. No, you're not. Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. Should this guy have to get his... apologize?
Dumb. No, if you're that dumb, if you're going to be, shoot off your mouth like that, then take the tasing. Hook him up.
Also, user, I kind of like this. It might be a new deal. User or listener stat of the week. Listener stat of the week. This comes from Jack Light of, he's living in Qatar. Listens in from Qatar.
All right.
We got him everywhere, man.
We do. Thank you, Jack.
So we've mentioned Cam McCormick before. Miami Hurricane tight end Cam McCormick is in his ninth season in college football. He played in 2016 when Barack Obama was the president. If the Hurricanes make the national championship game, it will be played in the evening of January 20th, 2025, which is the day of the presidential inauguration, which means should the Canes make the national championship and McCormick plays, he will have played college football during four different administrations.
Perfect.
Oh, we have the best listeners.
I mean, that's a stat. That's a stat.
Four different administrations. Oh, Lord.
All right, we'll be back with more and then small sample Heisman will try to say something nice. All right, going into the weekend, two teams that kind of need to show something. We're a little concerned. Alabama, which hadn't played well against South Florida. They go up to Wisconsin, handle business, jump around. The players were jumping around and all the Wisconsin fans left to drink more in sadness. And Oregon, which really got lucky, great special team play, but needed great special team play to defeat Boise State, which I think is a really good football team. They go to Oregon State, wild environment. They look excellent. Pat, thoughts on the bounce back of the Ducks and Tide?
Yeah, they're looking like they were supposed to look. Frankly, it's coming around for them, and you can see why. I mean, they've got fantastic, overwhelming talent. The Oregon offense, good Lord! I mean, Dylan Gabriel is pinpoint accurate and knows where he wants to go and needs to go, is decisive. And even when he's not, then he'll take off and run for 50 yards for a touchdown. But Terrence Ferguson, tight end, that dude's going to be like an NFL star. He's huge and he's fast and he catches, but they got other receivers too. So Oregon is loaded with skill position players. The offensive line is now coming along. That's been the big drawback, and I think they took a big step forward there. So I say Oregon now is ramping up. And as for Alabama, same thing. I mean, you know, that they took on a challenge. I think they maybe kind of were galvanized by people starting to get down on them, and you go up and you're going to play a fairly big name opponent in front of 80,000 people. And Alabama did what Alabama does. And wide receiver Ryan Williams, holy moly, the dude's 17 years old. He's 17 years old. He's got 10 catches for 285 yards and four touchdowns this season. He is not old enough to vote yet. That dude is a rising superstar, one of several true freshman wide receivers out there. But I think both teams took big steps forward towards major showdown games if they keep going. We got Georgia at Alabama September 28th, and we've got Ohio State at Oregon October 12th.
Yeah, they both kind of get their get-right games right before a bye, too, so they kind of have a pretty good feeling going into that off week. And Pat mentioned it, but you know, Oregon's offensive line, they have plenty of great skill players in Dylan Gabriel, quarterback, to pass the ball around, and they were just struggling. They used the first two games clearly they were rotating starters on that O-line. I think the rotation will probably stop now. It sounds like they've got a set line that they used against Oregon State, didn't allow a sack. So they've kind of got right there. And then Pat mentioned Ryan Williams, but Milroe continues to hurt teams on both through the air and on the ground. But against Wisconsin, I mean, he had, I don't know, a half a dozen at least design runs. He ended up running for like 75 yards and a couple of touchdowns. He's going to be a real issue as DeBoer's design ways, you know, to get him going on the ground too. And man, he's big and he is fast. And of course he's got that arm. Alabama looks scary.
One other, just a note, I thought was a really good, this could have been problematic, was Missouri. They're down 14-3 to this spicy BC team that is now, you know, you start looking and go, all right, BC, they beat Florida State. Everyone's beating Florida. They're still good. They played a really good first half, hung in there for a while. Missouri hit that gear that I was hoping that they're going to need if they're going to get through the gauntlet of the SEC into playoffs. I thought that was Bolden in particular made some big plays, but I thought that was a pretty impressive win for Mizzou.
It was, especially like you said, they got behind, and Missouri has a fairly long and tragic history of getting to big opportunities and not handling them well, but they handled some adversity there. Defense is very good for Missouri, and that was the big question mark. They only gave up 298 total yards to BC. They had a busted coverage that gave them like a 57-yard touchdown, and they had a 3rd-and-15 illegal hands to the face that kept the drive alive for BC's first touchdown. And that was a Bill O'Brien script job. That was excellent scripting. Other than that, BC didn't do very much because Missouri's defense didn't let them. So Mizzou, yes, another team that's showing signs of rounding into form.
All right, small sample Heisman time. We like to award it each week, and I'm doing it in a proper order this time. Pat, who's your small sample Heisman?
Yeah, we talked about Travis Hunter. He's too good for small sample Heisman. I am going simply to one specific play that was one of the great effort plays I've seen, and it looked for a while like it might be a deciding play in LSU South Carolina. It wasn't, but that's part of the chicken curse for you at South Carolina. Maurice Brown blocked a punt that was returned for a touchdown, and the way he blocked it was an incredible, incredible personal effort. He went straight into the lead blockers in front of the punter, went up, got hit, reached over, and on his way down, extended his hand and blocked the thing, and then his teammate picked it up and ran it in. Beamer ball, special teams, hugely important, and that was a great special teams play. So I'm sorry to you, Maurice Brown, that the Gamecocks didn't finish that game, but that's a small sample Heisman play if I've ever seen one.
Yeah, that was incredible. So my pick is actually on the other sideline. We saw the emergence of a LSU true freshman, Caden Durham, at running back. He was pretty incredible. Just South Carolina had trouble wrapping him up and tackling him. I mean, he must have they do that stat. PFF does that stat of basically like missed tackles or yards after contact. I'd love to see his in that game against South Carolina. They don't win that game without him late. True freshman from Oklahoma ended up with almost 100 yards, like 98 yards, 11 carries. Again, several of them dragging tacklers or making people miss. So, you know, LSU pumps them out down there, it seems, running back or receiver, and they appear to have another one.
I'm giving my small sample Heisman to the Tennessee offensive line. And this was not much of a game, 71-0 against Kent State. Total domination. And I know Kent State maybe is not that good, but I don't care. Running back, Sean Bishop, 7 for 120, 2 touchdowns. Dylan Sampson, 13 for 101, 4 touchdowns. Peyton Lewis, 10 for 91. It goes down. Everybody ran well. 55 rushes for 456 yards, an average of 8.3 yards per attempt. You go win a lot of football games doing that. Complete domination of the entire Tennessee offensive line. They played great. We talked going into the season about their defensive line. We talked about their skill players. Yeah, it's Kent State. Yeah, I mean, NC State's not bad. They haven't played the hardest schedule. The grading scale will get tougher for the Vols, but boy, 3 weeks in, this Tennessee team, my prediction on them hosting a playoff game, feeling a little pretty good about it. Feeling a little...
Mm-hmm.
Feeling good about
the Josh Heupel Bowl coming up here in next week. Yep. In Oklahoma.
Yeah, they're gonna at OU.
Yeah. By the way, Dan, just incredible timing. My small sample Heisman, Caden Durham. I was just talking about PFF. They just came out, literally just popped up with he broke 7 tackles, LSU's running back, and 50 yards after contact. He had 98 yards, so more than half.
And more than half, yeah.
Wow. All right. Can we say something nice? We say a lot of mean things on here. I think we fired a few guys, planned a Thanksgiving dinner. I don't know. Ragged on a guy who wanted to get his tased. Oh, maybe that's his thing. Whatever lights that bottle rocket, buddy, go for it. But maybe that was it. Maybe I'm misreading the situation. I don't know. It's not his thing. I hope not.
Let's
I don't
not
know.
Let's not light the bottle rocket.
Say something nice, Pat.
Okay, I will. I'm going to say something nice about the Indiana Hoosiers, who are not just 3-0, but a like dominant smash the opponent 3-0. The opponents are not good. Florida International, Western Illinois, and a UCLA team that shows every signs of absolutely sucking and maybe being the worst team in the Big Ten. But it's Indiana we're talking about. Indiana, for decades, has found ways to lose to bad teams, to screw up, to not be what this team has been so far under Kirk Cignetti. And that, I mean, they went into the Rose Bowl for the first time since they played in the Rose Bowl in 1967, actually January 1st, 1968, and absolutely smoked the Bruins, 42-13. They have got it going. Curtis Rourke, quarterback, transferred from Ohio. Man, they've plugged him in, and he's going. 307 passing yards, 4 touchdowns, ate up the UCLA defense. So Indiana, you know, Cignetti came in and was talking all kinds of noise and was just kind of a, you know, a bit of an off-season sideshow. But they're 3-0. They're playing Charlotte. Should be 4-0. They're hosting Maryland September 28th. At Northwestern, I know it's a long way to think about, but again, we're talking, like, what if Indiana hosts Nebraska and they're both ranked on October 19th?
Pat got mine. Cignetti was going to be my say something nice, but yeah, it's been impressive watching them. And again, yeah, as you mentioned, the competition hasn't been great, but like you said, Indiana, right? They lose some of these games against not great competition. So instead, I'm going to pivot a little bit, Dan, and I want to give some props to Texas State. Even in a loss to Arizona State on Thursday night, the Texas State Party Bowl on Thursday night was rocking down there in San Marcos, and they put up a heck of a fight against Arizona State, and we're right there to the end. It looked like, I mean, I wanted to be in the stadium, right? They had, I think we talked about it, or somebody tweeted about it, Dan. They had like $3 or $4 Busch Lights.
Damn right they did.
You know, it just looks like a fun place. And so look out for Texas State. You know, they, again, we talk about this G5 playoff spot, that loss is going to hurt, but they still got the Sun Belt ahead and you know, maybe they can do a little damage. We saw some good stuff out of Jordan McLeod, their quarterback who's on his like ninth school in 12 years or whatever. But the Party Bowl looked fun. I've done the river float quite a bit. They showed that during the game down there, the San Marcos River float. It's amazing. Gotta get there for a game. Looked like a good old time. It's a game you'd want to not be working at. I think you'd want to sit in the stands, have a few Busch Lights, Dan.
Nice hot night. Oh yeah, that did look a lot of fun. Great win for Arizona State. They get Texas Tech next. They're like sweeping through Texas. Sweeping through Texas.
That was a good game.
Yeah. I have to say something nice because I forgot to mention this earlier. That Toledo at Mississippi State game, one of the great accounting games of all time. The accountant, the business manager at Toledo deserves a small sample Heisman. Maybe, I don't know. Mm. I'm confusing all of my stuff. Mm. So Toledo was supposed to play Maryland yesterday, but Maryland said, we want to move your game to 2029. So Toledo said, sure, but you pay us $575,000 and we'll agree to that move. So Maryland said yes. So they made $575,000 just to play them 5 years from now, the Terps. And the great Terp rebuild, maybe it'll finally be in Jason Candle will still be there. They then got $1.2 million from Mississippi State to go to Starkville.
Wow.
So they... what was it? 41-17. They kicked the hell out of an SEC team and all these guys from Toledo. And if you know anyone from Toledo, they'll get mouthy when they got something to cheer about. They're yelling SEC down there. And they literally made 1.775 from two different Power Four schools.
Mm.
Wow. It's a good weekend.
Toledo business manager.
Well,
say
done.
Something nice. Someone take him out.
So that's almost $2 million
gets some
in their
frickers
budget.
Chickens. What?
I'm going to guess their budget is, I don't know, 50 yeah. million, 40 million. I'm just guessing. So that's a nice chunk there.
Heck this yeah. guy's wheeling and dealing. Like, dude, you got a stock tip? What do you think? What's your thoughts on the video? But I'm going to say something nice about my annual plea for the backyard brawl to open the college football season. The first Thursday that we play football collegiately in this country at 7:30, either in Morgantown, West Virginia, or Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, is where the season should start. 7 o'clock, whatever time we got to do. West Virginia Pitt is the most underappreciated, cherished rivalry we have. And I know about the Cy-Hawk, but these two teams hate each other. Their fan bases hate each other. The West Virginia people think, oh, the Pitt people are all big city snobs. And when you think of like big city snobs, you don't really think of Pittsburgh.
No, you don't. No.
But when you live in Parkersburg, West Virginia, you know.
Right, right. Yeah. Your smokestacks are taller than ours. Yeah. No, Pittsburgh's a beautiful town. Very beautiful town. But you don't really think of Pittsburgh as like you're snobby. But that's where this is how this works, right? And of course, the Pitt people think West Virginia, they're just coming in overalls and all that. So they hate each other. They literally have like. It's like they have terrible, terrible chants, terrible signs. Like, this is a real mean. Yeah. And the game is always good. This is what should spark the season, because if you don't want it getting lost in week three. West Virginia's leading 34-24 up in Pittsburgh yesterday. And then Pitt quarterback Eli Holstein runs two tremendous drives, throws big time passes, big runs. Two touchdowns. They come back. They win 38-34 in a thriller, crushing for Mountaineers, huge for the Panthers. It's the second straight week Pitt has come back from 10 down. They beat Cincinnati the week before. It's a thrilling game. The environment is unbelievable. This should be cherished and open the season. We got nothing against these teams, but Minnesota, North Carolina, that's what we got to open the season, and Colorado, North Dakota State. Like, this should be the opener. Who else wants to do their biggest game of the season first? It should be the backyard brawl. Can we make it happen? I will never stop saying something nice about a game where nobody says anything nice.
Not even just the opener. Let's go week zero. Kicked off the whole season. Well, Thursday night, why week not? Zero. First game. Why kick not? It off. Brawl.
Why not? I love the idea. I do.
Look, the teams are never going to be Ohio State, Michigan, or Alabama, Auburn. Like, no offense, guys, but it hasn't happened in a while. So maybe
Major Harrison, Tony Dorsett not coming back.
Yeah, every once in a while. But generally speaking, these are going
to
be good quality programs. Their fans really, they have good, pretty good fan base, especially West Virginia. But this is their thing. Have it, celebrate that, lift that up. Not just, hey, we got this Minnesota, North Carolina. Like, all right, fine game, but let's start with this. We need to start with anger, hate, spite, meanness, people getting trashed after the game, before the game, parking lot brawls, misery in the hollows,
burning pimenti
sandwiches, pimenti brothers, or whatever that thing is. Put your damn French fries in the sandwich. We ain't got time. I ain't got time to eat my French fries on the side. I got to kick some Mountaineer ass today. That's what I want.
They are petty. Did you see the scoreboard before the game started?
Yeah,
at the stadium, Pitt had the score of the 2007 game, 13-9.
Yeah.
17-year-old game. They're still. This is what they do. Ooh. This is what they do, and I love them for it.
That's right. They can do that. Look, they'll forever have that game. West Virginia, when they win, they need to, whatever trophy they have for this game. They need to just cart it back and forth on the PRT like all week.
There you go.
Week afterwards,
PRT baby.
All right, that's our show. We'll be back Tuesday. Thank you for overreacting with us. We'll be more rational by Tuesday, probably, perhaps. Continue to subscribe, share us on social media, tell your friends about us. We will talk to you later.